Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this. So we're beginning the morning. We'll say nothing embarrassing on the mic. We've both been sick for a while. What's the deal? Is this the end of days?
We should stop making out before the show.
And then I went to my wife's open house at her medically supervised weight loss clinic. It was a lovely affair. And they had some very nice low-calorie snacks, I must say. I was very impressed. The problem is I grabbed a handful of almonds out of this bowl in the waiting room. And I've never had nut allergies, but I'm starting to get one. And there are a lot of nuts that I can eat. There's certain oils that they sometimes put on nuts that give me problems. My throat is still
really gross.
My throat is still kind of swollen. So I'm not eating almonds anymore. I love almonds. It kills me.
I inhaled a cough drop while driving.
Did it actually go into your trachea?
It stuck in my trachea, and I had to cough it out.
Did you? And you didn't crash, at least.
No, and I think that has extended my symptoms for a while. Because it irritated
trauma
my throat.
To your larynx over a cough drop.
So I was trying to recover.
Kids, don't let this happen to you.
Don't let this happen to you while you're driving. No, don't. I mean, and I thought at the moment.
Your whole life flashed before your eyes.
It did a little
bit.
And
it was very disappointing. That's what I'm afraid of. Well, my life's going to flash and be like, damn.
The good parts went so fast, you know. Mm-hmm. And the bad parts, they were so obvious.
Okay. Charlie Bennett back from his near-death experience with a cough drop.
This is a low-energy morning. This is not even tired. This is a low-energy morning. You don't seem to be able to engage in the moment, Pete.
I'm on the verge of literally shutting down. I mean physically.
Oh, yeah.
All biochemical activity may cease during this program.
You're dying.
I'm so tired and so behind and so depressed over it. It's not even funny.
Let's talk about the nature of work.
Really?
Yeah.
And what about the nature of work?
Well, this, you know, so depressed, so behind, so much to do. You know, I when I was sick, there was a couple days there where I just could not do anything.
You thought about swallowing a bottle full of pills.
Well, you know, I was trying out a bunch of different medications to see if there was one that would help me. And they just, you know, I'm eating.
Cold remedies should not be inhaled through a crack pipe. That's all I'm saying.
Well, what if you set them on fire? How are you supposed to get the smoke into your lungs?
Okay, it probably pyrolyzes or oxidizes the unique medication therein.
Well, now you're just making up words.
Chemical engineers are good at that.
Pyrolyzes.
My favorite made-up word, fugacity.
Is that like how much Ian MacKay you have?
That's a real word. It's sort of the effective pressure in a particular system, the effective thermodynamic pressure. And only chemical engineers use it, which explains a lot about chemical engineers.
Well, there you go. So you were saying that you've got all this work that you have to do, and you're depressed because you haven't done it. I was saying that when I was sick, there were a few days where I really could do nothing but be at home in the moment with my family, you know. And
yeah, you can't concentrate for more than 5 minutes.
Right. It was obvious that I was not going to get any writing done. It was obvious I was not going to do any work. I was detached from my radio shows, you know. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't taking part. And I found myself, despite the deep discomfort of being sick, I was really happy. I felt very good about having a sort of explicit, you're not working, you won't be able to work.
Next up, disturbing moments with Pete and Charlie.
Why is that disturbing?
I don't know. No, I understand. You're happy because you could at least detach.
Yeah. And there was a sort of, there was this reminder, you know, that I think it's a Stephen King quote from his book on writing where, you know, life is not a support system for art. Art is a support system for life.
Ooh, that's like Italians live to eat and not eat to live.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and that obviously is terrible for you, except Italian food is amazing. Also, the house wine in Italy is better than really fine wine here.
And actually, Italian wine has improved in quality only recently, meaning only in the last century or so. For quite some time, it wasn't all that great.
You know, a century ago, I wasn't around. You weren't around.
It's so like we don't care.
It's like it never happened.
I think wine in general is a good thing. In fact, I had a glass of wine at this lovely open house.
So you're dodging my question with alcohol talk, Pete, which is
Senator,
ironic.
Senator, I've been advised not to answer this question at this time.
So
what's the question?
I was just a person without work, and it was really good.
Because you were
really
retreating
good.
Into the lower echelons of the hierarchy of needs. Who did the hierarchy of needs psychologically?
Maslow.
You know, where you're just trying to breathe and eat and try not to throw up on yourself.
Well, I see where you're coming from. I was not that bad, though. Okay. You know, it was just a really bad cold.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And I got to spend time with my kids.
Okay.
And I had conversations, you know, child-level conversations.
Daddy, why is there blood coming out of your eyeballs?
It was my nose. My toddlers can't even speak, so, you know, that's easy to have a conversation with them.
Mm-hmm.
My son will go, yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so it's like,
you're just in there prattling on. Well, I shouldn't have to put up with this crap. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you're raising a bunch of yes men.
Just the one.
Okay.
Just the one. The Juniper is more of a
Juniper's
more
like,
of a, oh, gotcha.
She's more
baby.
Like, suck it up, you wiener.
So I guess my implicit question is, why are you defined by the work?
I think that's a trap a lot of people get into. I think I'm less in that trap than most people. If I were more in that trap, I wouldn't be so behind on some of these things.
But now you're suffering from being behind.
Yeah. I bite off more than I can chew. I did that this semester. I'm sitting in and helping with two introductory open water scuba classes at Georgia Tech.
Huge mistake.
We're not quite 2 weeks into the semester.
Right.
And are you already a month behind?
No, I'm not a month behind, but I'm a week behind.
Yeah.
I'm a week behind on some things. Other things,
it was as
I'm
if
right
last
on.
Week didn't even happen.
I'm keeping up with my class. No one seems to feel the need to report me to the dean for incompetence in teaching. I just found out that two of the students in my class, one is the son and the other is the daughter of two faculty colleagues in other departments. So I'm like, oh, great. they both told me yesterday, I'm like, have they complained yet? And they're like, no, they seem to be enjoying the class. I'm like, all right.
These colleagues that you get along with?
Or? Yeah, these are colleagues I get along with who do work in education and education research. One of them is my collaborator. And so it'll be interesting. I screw up in class.
It'll come back to you several times.
Several different ways. Problem is I've got two classes of like 80 students each. Oh, that's hard to teach. I wish students could get more individualized attention, but it's just not going to happen.
Let's go back to the trap, Pete.
What is the trap?
Falling into the trap of being defined by your work.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of academics are, and they worry so much about...
Now, do you think that's because academics have the, like, you're producing yourself, you know, in your writing?
Yeah, in a sense, you're relatively
your names
independent.
On it all the time.
Right, so it's all about papers and money.
You're mostly choosing what you're going to do.
Yeah, and you get very resentful, I think, if somebody attacks that persona of your theories and your papers and things like that. And sometimes we're not always honest. Sometimes we're just trying to defend our thing, defend our theories to continue to elevate us in a system that rewards you for that sort of thing. So,
whoa, let's start again. So sometimes you don't want to defend your theories because you're burnt out?
No, I think you do. The point is sometimes your theories aren't perfect. Most theories aren't. Particularly the work I'm doing in humor. Theories on humor are woefully incomplete. And the good people admit that and say, well, look, we're still struggling. This explains some portion of it. There are probably some holes in it. Let's move on. Whereas other people are like, this is the quintessential theory on humor.
Well, I realized recently that a couple years ago, I decided, maybe not explicitly, but I definitely started doing things as if I had decided that I was going to figure out the question or investigate the question, what is a library in the digital age? And I was going to do that publicly.
A worthy question. And in fact, you wrote a white paper on that.
Me and several other folks. Right. I've done talks and written articles in my radio show and podcast are
And we have touched on that as well. Yeah, that's an important thing.
It became obvious to me that, okay, so this is what I'm going to work on. This is what I'm going to engage, yes. right? And I feel like I've done a lot of good work around that. You know, I've written good things.
But do you have the answer yet?
No, there's no answer.
I think you're right. It's very confusing.
A lot of times the answer for some people is, what is a library with no books? An unlibrary. That's an actual quote that was on the internet.
Was that person on crack cocaine?
Probably not.
Okay.
I don't know what the statistics are for crack cocaine users and internet
librarians.
Users or commenters, you know? But I bet you that Venn diagram is not...
The intersection is not the null set.
What does that mean?
That means that some commenters on the internet are on crack.
Yeah, but don't you think it's a very it's low? Don't you think it's a low?
Yeah, it's probably low. You're right.
How do you describe?
It may be on prescription diet pills, though.
A thin Venn diagram intersection.
Right, it's a small intersection.
It's a small intersection. You scientific types, you've got words for everything.
I believe this is set theory from the new math of the 1950s.
So, so I'm saying, you know, like I have this overall question, and it turns out that's defining what my work is. And there's some comfort in that, mm-hmm. you know, to know that like, oh, this is what everything's pointed at.
And it's a little scary because of the indecision. Your field is in flux. The word library itself will likely be obsolete. We may actually use a different word to describe this.
How dare you?
This nexus of knowledge and learning over which you preside.
So you took the N, the G
I was trying away to be cute.
From, yeah.
And at my age, cute is an adjective rarely used to describe me. Crotchety, annoying, odoriferous.
Are there any... Can you think of anything else where the word was like discarded because of the technological changes?
Gosh, will book disappear one day?
I don't know. I mean, like, it's a book is not a book, right? A book is not a codex. A book is not a scroll. A book, e-book, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. Like, there's what is the thing that all books have in common?
They contain information and knowledge.
Contain it or deliver it?
Contain and deliver.
And information and knowledge are two different things. So if it's a list of, you know, data points, is that not a book?
That is information. So I said information and or knowledge. Let's say and or knowledge.
Why would you bring that clunky construction of and or in?
Because I felt like it.
So the thing that all books
don't make me draw the Venn diagram for that.
The things that all books can have in common is that they contain information. Mm-hmm. What if you can't get to it? So if I take your will, Pete, and I put it in a safety deposit box, and then I break the key off and throw it into the ocean, mm-hmm. is that a book?
Why are we dealing with this minutia? I agree it's both contain and deliver.
Because you said... Will they even be libraries? Will they even be called libraries? And I must say,
I don't know.
That's much like a fluttering rag to a bull for me. And notice, I didn't say red.
Fluttering rag to a bull. I don't get it.
You know, in a bullfight.
Oh, I see. That pisses you off. Is that what you're saying?
Attracts me with my horns out.
Okay. But the point is, I don't care if they use the word book or use the word library. There will still be things... So it's kind of like one of the charges we gave our humor genome students yesterday in class. We said we want a group of you guys to look at the artificial intelligence that is used inside the Watson computer from IBM. This is the same computer that uses natural language processing and logical processing to scour the internet to find the answer to a Jeopardy question. And it sounds easy, but it's more difficult than you think. And
scour with like...
Well, we'll
steel
go out,
wool.
Find the information, search, and then discern from that an answer to a Jeopardy question. It's harder than you think, and it's taken the IBM folks a lot of interesting algorithms and many, many years to do it.
I mean, just think how hard it is when it's you trying to do it.
Yeah. So, and we want them to take a look at some of these routines, these utilities on the Watson system, and say, can these be useful in understanding, characterizing, and predicting humor responses? And go through them all. And maybe the answer is no, they're not useful. In which case, we will discard that effort and move on. I don't know if in the future it will be a library or be called a library or be anything resembling a library. Maybe it needs to be dissolved. Maybe it's going to disappear like the travel agency. Do travel agencies even exist?
I think there's one or two.
Yeah, and I think they deal with very special niche corporate type things where they have large parties and things like that.
Well, you know, trips to the Isle of Davos where you kill a peasant when you get there. That's what it's like.
They have that? Yeah, it's going to be
pricey.
I don't
see why they wouldn't.
That was trips to Washington where you can catch and live release a member of Congress. All right, we'll cut you down other than that, but only if you promise most not to be a butt.
Most people will be really depressed when they discover it's live release.
Oh, okay. I do not condone hunting people for sport.
Thank you.
I think I can go on the record.
Yeah, thank you
one.
For being direct about that.
Unless they are live released.
So is humor is your overall question? Do you get to use humor studies to define everything you do, or do you kind of have to let it go sometimes?
No, humor is just one part of what I do.
Yeah, so why are you letting yourself be divided like that? Do you think that's why you're depressed about not getting work done? Because some work is the humor and
yeah,
some
maybe.
Work is not. Because I have felt a lot better since I've just said, okay, anything that's separate from this library question, that's
lower
extra.
Priority.
Yeah, it's lower priority. It's gravy. It's mm-hmm. it's for fun. It's like, oh yeah, this is committee work. Is this going to help me with my promotion? Mm-hmm. Right? Because you know, there's certain things. There's like a checklist of stuff you have to do to
right,
be
and
to
that's the trap academics get into. They don't do things because they're interesting or important. They do them because will it help me with my promotion? Will it help me with tenure? Will it help me with these sorts of things?
That's kind of okay, right? I mean, like that.
To some degree, yes. You have to worry about yourself.
Because what that is saying, look, you have to do these things for this whole shebang to work. And we know that not everybody feels like, oh, yeah.
Shebang?
Yeah, the school here, it's a shebang.
Okay.
Shebang.
Well, I guess there's a balance.
Shebang, hebang.
Right.
Kabang. Shebang.
No, and I don't simply divest myself of research and teaching in the chemical engineering and technical fields because that still interests me. I still like that.
The thing I want to say is who would be on a committee that didn't have to? Committee work at a university is like paying taxes.
No, I don't think so. Sometimes you're on a committee because it's a topic that interests you. For example, I recently was at the first committee meeting of the task force of the future of education in classrooms here at Georgia Tech. We're trying to figure out what's going on in the future.
Is that
much like you are with the library?
Is that a bunch of professors who just get high and go, ugh?
It may very well turn into that. I cannot speak intelligently to that. But, you know, at the beginning, you're all gung-ho, like, hey. I think what worries us is that we already know or have a reasonable idea of what the future of classes and classrooms and education should look like. The problem is we will never get the resources to do it.
Well, someone has to be convinced of the six that run the place, right? And then mm-hmm. change it from there.
Yeah, so we have to formulate a more systematic plan and convince them that this is what we should do.
Now, I hear you that that's a cool committee, but that's not... representative of committee work, really.
Yes, I'm also on some other sort of boring committees.
Yeah, what's your most boring committee?
Actually, I'm really only on two now because I'm no longer on the Institute Undergraduate Curriculum Committee. I'm on the Chemical Engineering Undergraduate Curriculum Committee, and I'm behind on some tasks for that as well. We're rewriting the student handbook, which is kind of boring, but
yeah.
kind of important.
I remember when the...
And I'm holding it up. It's all my fault.
It's you?
Yeah. So I took the current draft from the associate chair, and he just didn't have time. So I finally did something no one else had, and I'm like, look, I will finish up the draft, and then we'll argue about it and finalize
no.
it. And I'm behind on it, but it is important, so I'll get it done hopefully in the next few weeks.
I remember when they were rewriting the library faculty organization committee, constitution, excuse me, and
You have a constitution?
We do. It may not be enforceable, but we have a constitution, and it's been rewritten and amended, and I think that was a year of many people's lives. And I'm a little bit ashamed to admit it, but I just stopped going to meetings for that time period. I was like, I don't care. I was New York. I abstained courteously. I had nothing to do with how to phrase the thing about librarians or archivists of equivalent ranks from countries that do not have accredited MLS's programs, but MLS programs, but also I don't care.
MLS, Masters in Library Science?
That's right.
Will the distinguished gentleman from the reference section yield the floor? I can only imagine what that's like.
It's a little snippier than that, I think.
Wow.
I actually asked a crew of the LFO.
What's the LFO? You're waving around a lot of acronyms that are confusing and enraging me.
Dude, we don't call this an acronym. It has a different name.
What's LFO?
Library Faculty Organization.
Okay.
It doesn't matter.
Does that have a secret handshake? That's how you know.
It's more you slap somebody in the face with a book.
What was the question?
It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. I mean, it was almost a existential question. It was a theoretical question. It was just mostly for fun, I think, because of what you said, just like what you said earlier. Nothing's going to change if, you know, five people discuss the future of education, the future of what was it, the flipped classroom in education?
No, it was just on the future of education and classes and what we do.
Right, so you all could come up with something and then write a white paper and then put it in everybody's hands, but nothing is going to happen unless there's that kind of convincing force separate, you know, the top-down kind of convincing.
Right, so we are cautiously optimistic, but we're cautiously pessimistic.
That's really, what everybody wants is a chance to sit for 10 minutes with the president and provost and make a case for. I think you all should concentrate on this very simple, succinct, you know, description of an initiative. You know, my joke is always in that room of six people, right? 15 years ago, somebody said, you know what? Maybe more trees on campus. Moment, yeah, sounds good. And then, you know, 15 years later, there's been a, you know, in the strategic plan, green space, walkability, you know, planting, and there's metrics of how many trees have we planted and what we've protected, all that. But that comes from someone just saying,
right, it takes time, but you have to start somewhere. And we do have more trees and grass on campus, and I like it.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like five folks sitting in a room, the committee for green space, like, we need more trees, and then started doing things. Like, it had to get up to the president or the provost or the, what's Steve Swant's title?
Grand Poobah.
Exactly. Or, you know, head of capital planning and space management.
The money man.
You know, and those committees can come up with, like I wrote the white paper with three of my friends, you know, three of my colleagues who are my friends. Wrote the white paper, and I don't know that it convinced anybody of anything.
But that's okay. You got to get some idea out
it
there.
It sent it out into the debate.
And actually, one of my colleagues brought up a good point that we had a linear design model where we're going to discover, and then we're going to do ideation, and then we're going to turn it into a report, and then we're going to finalize it. And she very correctly pointed out that in design, it's cyclic. You should have an initial plan and then cycle it through several times to refine and change based on people's
feedback.
Break it and fix it. Yeah, and hopefully we can do that. But I think most people that are in the trenches that are teaching, that literally work with the students, hear the same common complaint about our students, that we give them a lot of theoretical knowledge that is not particularly useful. And it makes no sense to have you memorize a lot of different methods and approaches and facts with the just-in-time delivery of knowledge now. What we should do is take a few example illustrations and show them how to learn the knowledge, use the knowledge, refine the knowledge, design things from the knowledge, and then gather new knowledge as they need it. That it's no longer important that you have to do chapters 1 through 17 in a particular text. You can skip a few and say, look, I'm not going to do this one, but this would be important if you had this kind of situation. And that's actually how I'm trying to teach my class. And it can't all be experiential learning. You must learn some fundamentals. You will have to learn some differential equations and things like that.
Here's the analogy that I'm thinking of you, right? You are like a New York artist trying to change the housing market by doing your art in your loft.
Wow, that sounds cool. That would be the kind of guy that went invited to dinner party. Man, this is Raul. He's attempting to change our culture here in Midtown by his art.
But, you know, what I'm saying specifically, like the housing market is changed by aggregate motion. It's not individuals, you know. And then also the work you do, the deciding that I'm going to live in this loft and do art is not what changes the housing market. You know what I mean?
No, but we do have a committee, and the committee can say, look.
You all have to do it together.
Right. Courses could be team taught from multidisciplinary areas.
And then it has to be responded to from outside. Forces that have nothing to do with art making have to then recognize, oh, there's stuff changing. You know, there's look, there's a lot more people living densely in this area that once was a meatpacking district, for instance. Right. So we need to establish better routes for, you know, collection services, or, you know, the infrastructure is crumbling there. We have to fix it. Although I get the feeling that that's a much more utopian vision of how it might have happened.
That's what this committee is trying to do. They're trying to pick a few things to try, and we'll have to try them. And some of those things may involve, why do we have a 15-week semester? Why don't we have 3 5-week mini semesters where you can mix and match the stuff that you do? Why don't we have a course team taught by somebody from business, somebody from policy, somebody from engineering to show them the whole perspective? And I'll tell you why. More resources. That's a much more difficult thing to do.
And how are you going to tell everybody about your plans?
Oh, communication is part of the committee's duty.
Are you reading that off of?
No, but I believe I read that off of something yesterday. No, and so this comes from the provost. The provost is saying, look, we want to figure out what these things are. We can't do everything, but I'm sure we'll pick a few things and we'll try them. And people are doing this surreptitiously now. My colleague Craig Forrest and some of the folks in mechanical engineering are doing multidisciplinary design sections. They take some industrial design students from the School of Architecture and they take some mechanical engineers and they put them on the same teams because they realize the value of that multidisciplinary experience. And they're kind of winking and nodding and people sign off and it's taught by two different instructors and they're just doing it as a thing, as a test case. And it's much better. But in the future, I think we will have things broken up into shorter time periods that will be much more multidisciplinary.
And since these are all experiments, it's hard to clear the space in your schedule or your responsibilities to be able to do them, right? These are extra things you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's part of the trap too, right? I mean, there's stuff that you have to do. There's grinding stuff you have to do. And then there's these
extra
things you want to do.
I have to teach, but I don't have to teach it in the new interesting active learning flip classroom modes using unique examples that I do now. That's a lot of extra work.
If that's the only thing you do, then you might get in trouble.
Right, but I am getting paid by the National Science Foundation to do this. This is a legitimate research project. And legitimacy in the academic world means someone's paying for it.
Did you get the grant? How'd you write that grant?
But there are other weird things that Lou and I do, and think weird things that you do that aren't being funded.
I got to write more grants.
That you do because you need to try new things out to improve either the library or the educational experience. Damn it. I'm punctuating everything with damn it for the rest of the day.
That's going to work
That's my latte, damn it.
That's going to work out in your committee, I bet.
Mm. Maybe.
So what's the solution to your depression?
Actually, I feel better already just talking about it. The solution is move on, do some more stuff. I will say this, that the long hours and the stress and the low pay are to some degree made up for by working in an academic environment where you work with students and colleagues to explore exciting new ideas and test them and try to make the world a better place.
You know, for some reason I thought, as you were saying, you know, the long hours and the, what did you say that? It was long hours.
Stress and low pay.
Yeah. The long hours, stress and low pay, they're their own reward.
Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities.
Recorded at the WREK studios on the campus of the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta, Georgia.
Those institutions support these views?
Probably not.
But they might.
If they were drinking.